Welcome to this week's Market Commentator Podcast, MoneyWeb series of interviews with investment professionals. Our guest this week is Gary Boyson, a portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Gary, welcome to the show. Now, you were head of trading at Funani Private Clients. Tell us about the decision to go it on your own.
Thanks for having me. I worked for Funani for what was close to 6 years. I mean, we were bought out right in the beginning when we merged a whole lot of companies together, including Cafisa Online and a few other small brokers. And I mean, I really helped them grow that business from next to nothing up to, you know, probably a mid-tier stockbroker. And I just decided that, after seeing how to do it, it was time to do it for myself. So we put in the licensing applications earlier this year. We were approved probably about a month and a half, almost 2 months ago. So it's very formative. It's a very new venture. And we've got the licensing in place, and it's all very exciting. And we've been onboarding our first clients and been working with all the usual partners. It's a new and exciting venture for us.
Potentially a fairly tough time to start an asset manager or a broker, you could argue, in the current sort of volatile markets. What is Rand Swiss's value proposition, would you say?
A lot of guys ask me, why Rand Swiss, Gary? It's an interesting name.
It is.
The first thing I say is it's because my wife is Swiss, so she always had to have a little bit of say in the company. it's exactly, the feel that we wanted, because the whole philosophy behind the company was, lately, most of the clients that we talk to, their businesses are local, their houses are local, their holiday homes are local. We deal with private clients. So their exposure locally is massive. And it's part of our investment philosophy that you need to take funds offshore to have a properly diversified portfolio. And that's why, we look at all sorts of different offshore options to take money out of South Africa. And that sort of takes care of the Swiss portion of the name. But, our expertise will always be local. While we run, and I'll tell you a little bit about this product in a bit, but while you can add Googles and Apples and Amazons into your portfolio, you'll never quite have the exposure to the companies that you do to local companies. And you can't phone up the CEO of Google and get an update on where he thinks the company is going. You can do that in South Africa. So I think, I'm very much, positive on the outlook for South Africa. I think, maybe with, elections coming up soon, the politics in South Africa has become a lot more vocal. And it's, you've seen consumer go, at least, confidence, business confidence dropping a little bit. Mm. I mean, you've seen the Rand blowing out recently as well. But from my point of view, I'm starting a business in this country because I believe in its future. And I think there's more opportunity in South Africa to make money than overseas. But I still think that it's a very wise move for clients to take funds offshore. And really, that's where you protect your money. But if you want opportunity, South Africa is your place.
Let's talk about being involved with company management. You raised a good point that as a South African investor, you can go to AGMs, you can go to results presentations and really get a feel for the management of a company. Why is that important when it comes to investing your money?
No, I think you've always got to understand the company that you're investing in. I mean, unless you going for pure diversification with ETFs where you're just getting a little bit and your investment philosophy is to buy because it's big. I mean, if you're buying something like Satrix 40, I mean, you've got to understand the business that you're operating in. I mean, it's the only way to really generate alpha for clients is to understand the companies that you want and understand where the benefits are for that company. And that's how you generate alpha. I mean, if you look at our offshore portfolios, I mean, we don't, pretend to be experts in offshore. I mean, we're not. So what we've run, and I mean, we ran it very successfully at Funani as well. There they called it the Global Titans portfolio. I mean, we literally did, basket ETF trackers, probably with 60% of the funds, somewhere around there, that diversifies it, a portion in the US, a portion in Europe, and a portion in China. You take a diversified equity ETF, something like the Vanguard S&P tracker. It's very low cost for clients, but it also you either overweight or you go underweight depending on your macro view. So I mean, we had a view that we thought US earnings were going to be more positive than the European earnings. And so we were slightly overweight U.S., slightly underweight in Europe, and we were slightly overweight China as well, but then neutral weighted it as that market sort of started heading to the moon. And then with the extra 40%, I mean, what we do, our investment philosophy, as well as especially offshore, we do run it on local stocks as well. We use a quant ranking model. So we look at all the fundamentals of a company. It gives us the ability to scan across, an enormous amount of stocks that you just can't do if you're really doing bottom-up stock picking. And go and find proper opportunities, and then go and understand those businesses properly, and then it's called a core and explore strategy. So your core would be that ETF basket, and then you explore with a couple of exciting companies that your scans have picked up. For example, we also had the view that the US dollar was going to continue to strengthen. And so we actually, in the investment committees, we looked at, really trying to find U.S. companies that had their earnings, primarily coming from, and revenue driven primarily from, within U.S. borders. So not looking at exporting companies. And we added things like Home Depot and Starbucks and a few others. And I mean, we then benchmarked that portfolio against MSCI World, because obviously we have to know where we stand. This portfolio is doing absolutely fantastically well. Hmm. If you look at it, we're outperforming MSCI World, but it was like 1% every month. But, again, you also get the currency component. So as the Rand was blowing out, it was just making this, compared to local funds, it was making it look absolutely spectacular. Now, whether the Rand's going to continue to blow out, that's probably a debate for another day. We can go into that for a long time as well. But, definitely, there's different strategies and different ways of picking companies there, depending on, which jurisdiction you're looking at.
And it is a difficult time at the moment in markets. I mentioned that earlier. You mentioned the US, Europe, China. We've seen lots of movement in the Chinese markets, Europe as well, with the Greek crisis. And US corporate earnings reports fairly disappointing this week. How would you approach, or how would you recommend that investors approach investing in these volatile times? Which strategies do you think are going to win out?
Again, remember, I look at it more from an advisory and a stockbroking point of view. So for me, every investor is a very different animal. And, there's no one strategy that fits every client. And, I know that from dealing with hundreds and thousands of clients over the years.
Yeah.
And each person, would require different exposure. If you're looking at it again, if you've got a longer term view, and you're really looking to be in the market for 20, 30 years, you don't listen to the noise that we're getting at the moment.
Yeah.
Is this going to be a proper correction? It's very difficult to tell. There are plenty of products that you can use to, put hedges in place, really bring down your risk if that's what you're looking to do. But again, if you're a long-term investor, I believe you should be looking at, you're looking at stocks like, Amazon obviously reported last week as well.
Mm.
And numbers were exceptional. And it just showed, companies like Amazon, they have such a large R&D spend, and Amazon's one, it sort of swings from profits to losses, almost constantly. But the reason for that is because they spend so much on R&D, and every time the market's getting a little bit wary, they just pull back a little bit on the R&D costs, and suddenly you see a brilliant earnings coming through. For me to go and invest in things like that, things like Google, where they've just got such a huge research spend, that they're really not struggling. These are not marginal companies, perhaps like our South African miners are at the moment.
Mm.
These are companies that if they need to turn on earnings, they can. But what they're doing instead is reinvesting in their own businesses. They're reinvesting in new products. It was also, you mentioned this earnings season. You look at Google's earnings. It's one of the reasons they outperformed analyst expectations massively as well, is because they just showed that they could get a handle on their cost. While they are investing in things like driverless cars, Google goggles and augmented reality, they can put on the brakes and they can turn on the earnings if they have to. At this stage, they just don't have to. They'd rather plow it back into improving their own company. Now, that's definitely sectors that I would be looking at, and that you want to look at for the long term.
Mm. And here in South Africa, Gary, which stocks do you like here?
We sort of have a more of a stockbroking mentality. We send out a lot of research to clients. So if you go and sign up here, you can sign up on the website for free. We normally give our 10 recommended stocks. So at the moment, we are looking pretty conservative. I've perennially loved Aspen. I think it's absolutely fantastic. It hasn't quite performed for us this year, but it's definitely got to be on the list. I definitely like a company like PSG. If you look at the sum of the parts and its underlying operating businesses, obviously with this Advitec Curo deal going on now, it's going to be brilliant, you know, it's going to be earnings enhancing for Curro as well. You look at its Capitec exposure. We think buying the basket through PSG is a lovely way for clients to get exposure to a number of fantastic businesses. In one of our quant scans, we actually picked up Steinhoff and Mondi at the beginning of the year as stocks that you just have to hold. Steinhoff, we liked ahead of its listing in Frankfurt, and we backed it right from the beginning of the year, and it's done fairly well for this year so far. Obviously also coming after some corporate earnings last week, at least a corporate announcement last week that the size fund build will be buying Iliad. And then, obviously, even though we've had rate hikes recently, we still like in the retailers, we still like Woolies and Mr. Price. There's no question about that. I mean, especially with what Woolies is doing with David Jones offshore. And that list, that list does tend to change, depending on updates from the company. But, if you're going for those solid blue chip companies, I still think that you'll be fine.
You mentioned Steinhoff and its offer to acquire Iliad Africa. That's a building materials company for around 1.3 billion rand. What do we know about Iliad?
Iliad, it's probably been a little bit of an underperformer in the sector so far. So if you look at the peers, something like Cashbuild and even Massbuild to an extent, it's actually been a sector that's been fairly well. Selling products, for home improvement. I was listening to the Iliad CEO the other day, and he said it's almost like a foodstuff. It doesn't matter. It might be a cyclical industry, but people will need to build houses. So, bricks will sell. And I think if you look at the actual deal that they're doing, it's going to work very well. Their footprint it hardly overlaps. And it's going to give Iliad really a boost up into the next level. And I think, while the Iliad management's going to stay on there as well, in the beginning stages here, it is still going to run as two separate businesses. I think what Steinhoff can do, bring in expertise, is going to be very, very good for the company. And I think, it's a good deal for shareholders.
If Curro does buy Advantech, we will have a very sizable private education company on our hands. But at the moment, Curro and Advantech management not seeing eye to eye, it seems. Who would be the big winners in this deal if it were to go through?
Well, to be honest, I think the shareholders of both companies, obviously, because you've got Curro trading on, very, very lofty multiples at the moment, and Advantech, far more reasonably priced. Like I said, it's going to be earnings accretive to Curro. At the same time, Curro, when they came out of the 13 rand thereabout offer, it's an enormous premium to where Advantech's trading. So for Advantech shareholders, I think it's an excellent opportunity. Curro's made the offer in a way that 50% of it is going to be underwritten by cash. They've already spoken to Kagiso Asset Management and to Coronation. They both seem willing to take Curro script. So and between the two of them, I think they own just about 45% of the company. So that really means that, the offer, if it does come in, there's a lot of talk whether this is a real offer. And, Frank Thompson's come out and said, this is not a real offer. We don't need to take it to shareholders yet. But, if shareholders do get a cash, it looks like they will be able to get a cash or script option. I think either way, it's a good deal for Advantech shareholders. You can either take cash at a massive premium to the ruling price, or you can take Curro script, which I still think is despite the very high value, high multiple that the stock's trading on, it still has a very bright future. Look at the potential for private sector low-cost schooling expansion in South Africa, it's still enormous. And if you look at their target of, I think it's 80 schools by 2020, it can really turn on the money taps. And some guys have said that there might be competition commission issues, but I think that's I really don't see that being an issue to the deal, as there's still a lot of room to grow in South Africa. Obviously you've got government as a competitor, you've got plenty of independent private schools that aren't listed groups as competitors, and the market, even if you had a merged vehicle between Curro and Advantech, it would still be a small player in the overall market and plenty of room to grow. So I think to be honest, a win for all shareholders and a very exciting sector.
Certainly a deal to keep watching. Let's talk a bit about Kruger Rands. This is something that you do offer to clients, as do many other brokers. You pointed out to me earlier, the gold price has of course come under significant pressure lately and is really off its highs of nearly, I think, $1,900 a fine ounce around 2011, not that long ago. Why is gold still a good investment? Is it still a good investment? And are we going to see the price of gold recover?
Gold's always a difficult one. I mean, you know, like I'll trade gold, but you know, it's very seldom that I recommend gold to clients as an investment vehicle. I mean, I'd far rather go and buy a company that has a management team that wakes up every morning and tries to think how best to make me money, rather than a metal that's literally just going to be buffeted, you know, by the winds of supply and demand. And in gold's case, I mean, it's not even an industrial metal. It's really a metal that you know, it's almost purely sentiment driven. So I think a lot of the sell-off that we've seen recently is obviously, it was about, it must be about 2 weeks ago now, that China, you know, released their some data on their central bank buying. I think they had bought 600 tons of gold. You know, first time we had numbers like that released since 2009. And I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, pointing and saying that perhaps that was not quite as much as everyone had hoped they had been buying. And that put a lot of pressure on the price. There's also been some sort of speculation about you know, market manipulation in gold as well, especially coming out of China, because of the volumes that are going through it during very, very thin times in the market, and trying to put pressure on it. But for me, yeah, gold as an investment, I mean, you can look at it as a hedge, you know, but I think that there's better ways to get you know, hedges into your portfolios. I mean, these days we've got very, very complex and very cheap methods of hedging portfolios. So to go buy gold as something to diversify your portfolio, I think there are better options. But yeah, like you said, I mean, it's something that very few clients know, that most stockbrokers can actually buy and sell Krugerrands. I mean, there is a double on screen for I think 10 halves and 4 Krugers. And I mean, quite often that because it is very thinly traded, I mean, quite often those prices move around, and you can, it's very easy to work out what the fair value of a Krugerrand is. You take spot gold and times it by the rand, and you'll get where the midpoint of the double should be. But yeah, like I said, that double pushes out, and sometimes you can get quite an opportunity. You'll get your Krugerrand for 500-600 rand cheaper, whether you're buying or selling.
Foreign exchange trading, that's another popular product among stockbrokers. It's come under significant regulatory scrutiny off the back of, I suppose, some corrupt practices in this arena. But I'm surprised at how many retail investors I meet who trade in Forex. Can a retail investor really make money off Forex trading?
I feel you can definitely make money, but can you make money consistently? I think is the question that you want to ask.
Can lose more money, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think in the long term, the problem with currency trading is that it has mass appeal to the retail market, because you know they might not understand one of these small cap companies. You don't know how to look at it in the right way, but almost everyone has a view on where the exchange rate is going, and you know it's something that you get in almost every news bulletin. Where's the exchange rate going? I mean, it's a very talked about instrument, so it becomes popular because clients feel that they understand it. Again, though, I mean, the way that Forex trading works, I mean, the gearing is obviously a lot higher than even geared stock products. So, I mean, you know, typically if you're trading single stock futures or CFDs in South Africa, you're probably getting about 10 times gearing on your position, which obviously means, you know, if you take, you know, you buy a share, it goes up 5%, you're going to net a 50% return in your portfolio. With currency trading, that can be as high as, I mean, I've seen 100, 200, even 500 times geared. So you get, you know, this massive exposure for a very small margin deposit, which you know, it ups the risk massively. And I think clients don't understand quite the impact that you know, a violent move in the currencies can have. And I mean, and I say retail clients, but I mean, you saw a lot of international currency brokers also getting burnt, when the Swiss National Bank changed their policy.
Yeah.
And I mean, we saw some of the biggest brokers in the world going out of business. I mean, we saw brokers, you know, not honoring their commitments because obviously they said that it was impossible for them to trade the underlyings. And I mean, it's definitely not a sector for the faint hearted.
Absolutely not. I think you make a very good point there. Finally, Gary, what's the one thing that you are watching most closely at the moment in markets?
Oh, probably, I don't want to say the Fed hike, because I think everyone's watching to see when the Fed hike is, if and when it's going to be. I still think it's going to be towards the end of next year, but Yellen seems determined to at least make a token hike this year.
Interesting view.
Yeah, I think it's quite contrarian. But I think definitely at the moment all eyes on the US. I think, you know, Greece has sort of taken a bit of a back seat, you know, with all the sort of market-saving moves China has made as well. I think the focus has come off China. And we've been expecting that as the U.S. earnings season starts to ramp up, the focus is just going back onto how are these companies doing, what sort of condition is the consumer in, and are they still making money?
Quickly, why do you think the Fed will only hike rates at the end of next year?
No, not at the end. I think you're going to see a rate hike. It's been my view for a long time that you'll see it sort of beginning of 2016.
Okay.
I don't think there's enough inflation in the system. I'm starting to believe that Janet Yellen will do one small token rate hike this year just to maintain Fed credibility. But I don't believe that there's not enough inflation in the U.S. system. The dollar is too strong at the moment. And I don't think that they need to hike yet. 2016, and we've seen it. I mean, we've been talking about, is there going to be a Fed rate cut all the way through 2014? It continually gets pushed out. We haven't had it pushed out yet, but I think there's still room for the analysts to reassess their opinion one more time.
Here we go. Gary Boyson is a portfolio manager at Rand Swiss.